From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, banning a legal national sport in Puerto Rico.
I'm 69, going on 70, and I've been fighting roosters since I was 15. My father was a cockfighter, my grandfather was a cockfighter. So this has been my life and my passion.
Cockfighting in Puerto Rico, a celebrated cultural tradition or a cruel and harmful one? Also on our show, Grammy-nominated artist Jesse Reyes sings from the soul.
Sometimes when you're singing the song, it's like a wound you're trying to heal, but then you keep opening the wound every time you sing. So it's difficult, but it's a spiritual moment between me and friends that I've never met.
All this coming up on Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Stay with us. No te vayas. Welcome to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Just a warning before we start, this episode contains depictions of animal violence. In Puerto Rico, cockfighting is more than entertainment. It's a profession, it's a tradition, and it's a way of life. It's also a multi-million dollar industry that employs thousands of people. The practice is passed down from generation to generation. Those who raise roosters say they love and respect their treasured birds. But animal rights activists have long said that this tradition is violent and cruel, and after many years of trying to outlaw it, they finally succeeded. Last month, the U.S. federal government officially banned cockfighting in Puerto Rico. But despite the law, the cockfighters have no plans to stop organizing fights, even if they have to go underground. Adrian Florido is a reporter for NPR's Code Switch, and he's been covering cockfighting in Puerto Rico. He's going to take it from here, and just a note, this piece originally aired on Code Switch before the new ban was enacted. We'll get an update from Adrian after the piece. Here's Adrian Florido.
So I came to a cockfighting arena called the Gallera Borinquen. It's this rectangular building on the side of a mountain road in the middle of the island. It's got a huge rooster painted onto the side of it. It's one of the oldest cockfighting arenas in Puerto Rico. And on Saturdays, people, mostly men, from nearby communities bring their roosters here to fight. There's a little pit in the middle of the arena, and it's surrounded by bleachers. It looks like a miniature stadium, and people are cheering for their birds, screaming at each other from across the bleachers to place bets. This man standing on his tiptoes, egging on his bird, is Johnny Rios.
What do you feel when you're sitting here watching this?
Anxious that you don't want your bird to get hurt, that you want your bird to win.
His rooster is looking pretty beat up. It's covered in blood.
Johnny, dile que la cosa está mala.
And it looks like it's going to lose the fight because the other bird has just been pecking away at him mercilessly. And it's stabbed Rios's bird a couple of times with its spurs, the little plastic spikes that they attach to their feet.
You see, right now, he got no strength.
You're just looking pretty bad.
Yeah, because of that wound that he got in top of the leg.
But his bird doesn't give up. It gets this burst of energy, and it starts really attacking its opponent. And then suddenly the fight takes a turn, and it's the other bird that's lying on the ground, gasping for air, unable to get up. It's pretty gruesome.
If that one stays like that, we're winning. If he gets up, don't leave him the fuck alone. Leave him the fuck alone. Cállate. Mierda. Yo, he got up.
After all that excitement, the fight turns out to be a draw.
Ay, está lleno de aire también. Vete, llévalo y
lo cures,
límpialo.
Rios tells a friend to take his bird to the ringside veterinarian to clean his wounds, because Rios is going to take the rooster back to his house, heal him up, so he can fight again on another day. Johnny Rios' house is in the mountains, not far away. It's got a killer view.
I got 3 acres here, nobody bothers me, I raise my own birds.
He calls it his finca, his farm.
I'm 69, going on 70, and I've been fighting roosters since I was 15. My father was a cockfighter, my grandfather was a cockfighter. So this has been my life and my passion.
You can see that from the tattoo on his arm. It's a rooster framed by two words, tradición y cultura, tradition and culture.
I just don't put on any regular tattoo that you don't know what it says. Like when you put on those Chinese letters, you don't know what the hell is it. Well, I put it on because it means something to me.
For most of his life, Rios lived in New York, where he fought roosters illegally.
I got arrested about 100 times in New York fighting birds, you know, because I'm Puerto Rican, it's part of our heritage, it's part of our culture. And when I used to see the judge used to say, you're not in Puerto Rico no more. You're in New York, and in New York, we don't fight birds. Okay, well, I'm fine. So
he moved back to Puerto Rico, where he built this house on this little mountain peak. He's got his cages and his pens up here for raising his roosters.
What's this one's name?
ATM.
ATM, why ATM?
Because it kills them quick.
you just pull the money right out.
Yep. He kills him quick, and you go and you get your money. He already killed. He has 9 fights.
9 fights?
Yeah.
Never lost one?
No. And he has one eye only.
In 2 weeks, on December 20th, Johnny Rios' passion, cockfighting, is going to be illegal in Puerto Rico, a federal crime. Because last year, Congress passed a ban on cockfighting in U.S. territories, which are the only places that Congress has authority over where cockfighting is still legal. So December 20th, the day that ban takes effect, is a day that thousands of cockfighters in Puerto Rico are dreading. One, because many of them make their living off of cockfighting, but also because cockfighting is deeply ingrained in Puerto Rican culture. It's a recurring theme in art and literature. The University of Puerto Rico, the island's most important public institution, has a rooster as its mascot. And so when this ban takes effect, for a lot of cockfighters, it's going to sort of be the end of a way of life. Because if they're caught breaking the law, they face steep penalties, up to 5 years in prison. Now, I say it's the end for a lot of these cockfighters, because many of them have no plans to stop fighting roosters, like Johnny Rios.
Most of the cockfighters, los galleros, the true ones, they're going to continue on fighting. Right now, you're going to see all the chicks that I got now for next year.
So you're not scaling down at all?
Hell no. You think if I did it in New York, that now that I'm in my own country and this has been part of our culture, I'm going to stop? Because Blanquito over there in put this law, because these people, what's happening is that the American people, they don't know what's behind it. All they see is two birds fighting. It's not just two birds fighting. It's the economy. It's the pride that goes into it. It's part of our culture that we've been doing this over 100 years. And then all of a sudden, these people who are not Puerto Ricans are going to come and tell us to stop? Hey, come on. That shit's not going to happen.
He said once the 60 or 70 licensed cockfighting arenas across the island shut down, people are just going to go underground. He's already preparing a couple of sites for illegal cockfights himself. Now, as you can probably sense from the way Rios talks about this, this is not just a story about cockfighting. It's a story about what happens when cultural values come into conflict, about the long history of that happening in Puerto Rico. And it's a story about who gets to decide what Puerto Rican culture is.
Mr. Chairman, I have an amendment at the desk.
Amendment number 28, report number 115-679.
So, you know, cockfighting is already illegal in all 50 states. But for years, animal rights activists, specifically the U.S. Humane Society, have wanted it banned in Puerto Rico and the other U.S. territories, too. And last year, they finally got members of Congress to pay attention.
We're talking about things that if it were to happen in the well of this chamber, many of us would look away because we would be shocked at the gratuitous violence. To characterize this as a cultural norm that we should just walk
This is Peter Roskam, who at the time was a congressman from Illinois. He and some colleagues wrote a few lines into last year's federal farm bill to ban cockfighting in U.S. territories. When the ban got introduced, though, it caught Puerto Rico's politicians by surprise.
Today I rise to express my utter disappointment with the inclusion of extending of the prohibition of the cockfighting in the territories in the farm bill before us today.
This is Jennifer González Colón, Puerto Rico's representative in Congress, who, because Puerto Rico is a territory and not a state, does not get to actually vote on bills. But still, she took to the House floor to try to get the cockfighting ban removed from the farm bill.
For the case of Puerto Rico, we've been regulating the industry of cockfighting since 1933.
And her argument was, look, Puerto Rico is in bad shape economically. It's in the middle of a 13-year recession. It's billions of dollars in debt. Hundreds of thousands of people have been forced to leave the island because they can't find work.
This is an industry that represents more than $18 million in our economy, and also more than 27,000 direct and indirect jobs on the island. So we are talking about how distressful is the economic situation in the island, but then we are approving another federal regulation without even consulting the people of the Puerto Rico or even the territories. In
our case, you can hear she's frustrated because this just felt like the latest example of Puerto Ricans having no real political power.
I represent 3.2 million American citizens on the island, but I can't vote in this floor. I don't have any representation in the Senate side. But then we have another regulation coming to the island with even giving us an opportunity to debate it or an opportunity to actually vote against it.
González's objections were futile, though. The ban stayed in, and in Puerto Rico, cockfighters were shot. Thousands of them from across the island took buses and carpooled into the capital, San Juan, and they marched. A lot of them marched with their roosters, raising them into the air as they made their way through the streets. And to give a sense of how much people care about this, I've been to a lot of protests in Puerto Rico over the last couple of years. And other than the ones last summer that forced the governor to resign, this was one of the largest I saw. And the protesters were all saying more or less the same thing. This is our tradition. This is our culture.
De Puerto Rico, esto es cultural.
Esto es tradición. Están atentando contra nuestra cultura.
Throughout the afternoon, politicians from across the island lined up to address the crowd. The mayor of San Juan, Carmen Yulín Cruz, she got up into the bed of a pickup truck at the front of the protest. Someone shoved a rooster into her arms. She took the microphone and told the crowd that she'd just signed an ordinance prohibiting city police from helping enforce the cockfighting ban once it takes effect. The mayor said that if federal agents wanted to stop a cockfight, they were going to have to do it alone. She planned to defy the ban. So as this protest was wrapping up, I saw an old man who was walking away from it with tears in his eyes.
Me da mucho sentimiento. Seguro me han herido en el alma. Yo nunca esperaba que me hicieran esta cuestión.
He was wearing a little wooden medallion around his neck, carved into the shape of a rooster, and a hat with an embroidered rooster on it. And he told me that the news of the cockfighting ban had wounded his soul. He said, you have to understand something.
Usted puede decir que es una cuestión de sacrificio de animales. Mire, nosotros no. Eso me ha dado.
People say this is about sacrificing animals, about animal cruelty, he said. But we cockfighters, we don't see it that way. We respect these birds. We admire them for their bravery. They inspire us.
Por su valentía, su gallardía. Y cuando es un gallo fino de pura raza, él se levanta y gana.
He asked me to come to his house in the town of Vega Alta. He wanted to show me what he meant when he said that they admire these birds, that cockfighting is more than just bloodshed, that it's a tradition with a long history. So, a couple of months later, I did go to his house.
Coming up on Latino USA, we hear more about Puerto Ricans' passion for cockfighting, but also the other side of the argument.
We're talking about cruelty. This is not about somebody's culture or the way they want to view themselves or what they want to respect or not respect. This is about stopping a heinous act of cruelty.
Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from Indeed. With its skills tests built for employers who want to see a deeper sense of the person behind the resume. Learn more at Indeed.com/NPR. And the Carnegie Corporation of New York, supporting innovations in education, democratic engagement, and the advancement of international peace and security. More information is available online at carnegie.org.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Reporter Adrian Florido has gone deep into Puerto Rico's cockfighting arenas to understand the tradition and culture surrounding the practice. Before the break, we heard from Luis Ángel del Valle, who shared that cockfighters don't see this as animal cruelty, that they respect and admire these birds for their bravery. Adrian is going to pick it up from here, just as he arrives to visit Luis Ángel del Valle's home.
Qué hermosa la casa de ustedes.
His name is Luis Ángel del Valle. On the patio in front of his house, he had four roosters tied to cinder blocks. The strings attached to their feet were just long enough so the birds could roam the patio but not attack each other. And they all had names.
A este le puse el eléctrico. Ese se llama el caimán. El bolito ese se llama Astro Boy.
Eléctrico, caimán, Astro Boy.
Y este, mi amor. Pite.
And this one, he said, picking up a regal red and black rooster, this one is my love. He's crazy about me, Del Valle said. We went into Del Valle's backyard and sat under a lush pana tree, which was just starting to bear fruit again 2 years after Hurricane Maria damaged it. Del Valle looked up to make sure none of the giant fruits were going to fall on my head. Like Johnny Rios, who we met earlier, and like a lot of cockfighters, Del Valle comes from a long line of cockfighters, his father, his grandfathers. They gave him his first rooster to raise when he was a boy. And Del Valle said he still remembers taking that rooster to the ring for its first fight. His bird lost. It was killed.
Primer gallo que tuve lo lloré. Ah, lo lloré como dos días.
Del Valle said he cried for 2 days. But he said what that did was motivate him to breed birds that were even stronger, even more aggressive. He'd travel to different parts of the island, get advice from the old men who'd bred roosters for decades. Some of the roosters on Del Valle's patio today are direct descendants of the ones he started breeding more than 50 years ago. Del Valle beams with pride about that.
Mi raza son pura y fina. Por eso es que son tan fuerte.
My roosters are pure, Del Valle said. They're fine. That's why they're so strong.
Mi gallo es un gallo bueno que nació pa la pelea. Mi gallo es un gallo fino. Yo se lo juego a cualquiera. El compa Chago Mejía un gallo me regaló.
This respect Del Valle has for his roosters is so common in Puerto Rico. So common, there are songs about the relationship between men like him and their birds. This is one of those songs, El Gallo del Jíbaro. It's by the popular folk singer Andrés Jiménez, better known as El Jíbaro.
Ellos conmigo son como si fuéramos amigos. Nosotros tenemos una relación, ¿tú entiendes? Y yo hay veces que pienso...
Listening to Del Valle heap so much love on his birds is kind of striking, because it can seem hard to reconcile the love that he and other cockfighters have for their roosters with the violence of cockfighting, with tossing them into a ring to peck and claw each other to death. But Del Valle says cockfighters don't see a contradiction there. They see it like this.
El gallo, Dios lo creó para eso, para pelear. Esa es su naturaleza, chico. Tú sabes, los
These roosters, God created them to fight, he said. They're bred for this. They fight by instinct from the time they hatch. And because we have such affection for them, we give them the opportunity to do what they were born to do. He said this is what the activists and the members of Congress behind the cockfighting ban don't understand. He gets angry talking about this because he remembers the stories his grandfather used to tell him about the last time the U.S. banned cockfighting in Puerto Rico.
Y eso fue que cuando llegaron los americanos aquí, después de la guerra hispanoamericana, llegaron los americanos, tú sabes.
Del Valle is talking to me about 100-year-old history, about when the U.S. invaded Puerto Rico and took it from Spain during the Spanish-American War. It was a year later, in 1899, that the U.S. government banned cockfighting on the island as part of a broader cultural project to Americanize its new colony in the Caribbean. It imposed English. At one point, it was illegal to display the Puerto Rican flag. Del Valle's grandfather told him stories about these tall white men who'd visit poor communities in the mountains, congressmen.
Cuando ellos veían a esos tipos, tú sabes, grandote, amarillote, y, tú sabes, eso es un cangrimán, porque como le decían, congressman, lo que yo pude apreciar desde pequeño con esa palabra era un tipo que era listo, tú sabes, como que tenía el poder.
They were the people who knew how to get what they wanted, Del Valle said. They were the people who had the power. When cockfighting was banned, it just went underground. And it didn't come out into the open again until 1933, when a Puerto Rican senator convinced the island's U.S.-appointed governor to legalize it.
Pues esa gente, pues ahora quieren hacer lo mismo con mi gallo de pelea. Y eso, olvídate de eso.
Now those people want to do the same thing again, Del Valle said. They want to take my roosters. He said it's the story of Puerto Rico's colonial condition, the U.S. government stamping out the things that define Puerto Rican identity, criminalizing its culture. But Del Valle said, we're not going to let that happen.
We work on every continent and in over 50 countries. And we hear this argument about culture all the time.
This is Kitty Block. She's president of the U.S. Humane Society, which convinced Congress to pass the cockfighting ban. I asked her to respond to this criticism that this ban is U.S. colonialism.
Do you feel like that's what this is? That this is some kind of an imposition, a colonial imposition on Puerto Rico?
Not at all. We're talking about cruelty. This is not about somebody's culture or the way they want to view themselves or what they want to respect or not respect. This is about stopping a heinous act of cruelty. Interestingly, I've been reading about some literature, someone doing some research and saying that cockfighting actually is a form of colonialism because that's what the Spaniards brought. And that was something that they brought to them when that was a colony of Spain. So there's lots of different ways of looking at that.
She said, yes, cockfighting may be ingrained in Puerto Rican culture.
But the main point is there are certain acts of cruelty, of violence, that should be prohibited, whether it's somebody's culture or not. Cultures evolve. And just because it's been part of your society does not mean that act should stay legal or continued simply because you've built a number of things around it.
Because cockfighting is so deeply ingrained in the culture and in certain communities, people have no intention of leaving it behind. They're saying, we're going to go underground and that's going to be worse for the birds.
But that's like saying don't ever enact any law. Don't enact laws where you can't beat your spouse or have drugs to minors. Don't do it because it's just going to go underground because people are going to do it anyway. That's not a society. That's not how a society works. You go underground, you're an outlaw, and you're subject to enforcement and prison time. And these are significant penalties, and that's important.
In Puerto Rico, there are plenty of people who agree with her on this, who support the ban, who do think cockfighting is cruel, and though it has been a part of Puerto Rican culture for a long time, don't think it necessarily should continue to be. But there's no organized movement against cockfighting, like in Spain, for example, where bullfighting is a big part of the culture, but there are also organized movements of Spaniards who oppose it. In Puerto Rico, there's none of that. I talked to a historian, a man named Juan Yanes Santos, and I asked him why he thought that was.
Es muy propio de nuestra situación política.
Yanes said, look, you can't separate anything here from Puerto Rico's political relationship with the U.S., from the fact that we aren't a state, we aren't independent, we don't have any voting representation in Congress, we can't vote for president, from the fact that we have very little say over our own affairs, that we have everything imposed on us.
Sí, tú tienes toda esta cuestión encontrada de gente que no le agrada el deporte, pero que por el otro lado, pues tiene esta cuestión del discurso nacional de que sale a surgir, ¿verdad?
And so, he said, you have a lot of people who may not like cockfighting, who might think it's cruel, and yet something they like even less is having outsiders come in and tell us what kind of cultural practices we can engage in as Puerto Ricans, to define Puerto Rican identity for us. And he said that's why a lot of people don't feel terribly motivated to actively oppose cockfighting. And it's why so many cockfighters are planning to defy the ban, to risk arrest. Some even say they're going to defend their roosters with their lives. Jose Torres is one of those men. He, like the two cockfighters you've already met, is also a lifelong cockfighter. He also lives in the Central Mountains in a town called Utuado. He also wants to defy this ban. But for him, things are more complicated.
Hey.
Torres has three little kids and a wife, Lismari Rivera. He supports his family by raising and training roosters for fights. He's got cages for 250 birds.
250.
They're lined up in rows in his backyard. They're stacked up on his roof. And every day, the whole family gets up before sunrise to feed them, let them out for exercise. If the roosters have injuries from their fights, they tend to their wounds. We sat down in the family's living room. Torres and Rivera sat on the couch. Their kids were on the floor playing with the family's favorite rooster. And Torres had a stern expression on his face.
Ya nosotros estamos muertos, lo vale que lo entierren. Esto está muerto. No hay otra tonta.
This industry is dead, he said. We're already dead. All that's left is for them to come and bury us. Torres said he could do what a lot of cockfighters are planning to do, to go underground, raise and fight roosters illegally. But he said he's not going to do that. He has a family to support, he said. And if he gets a federal felony conviction and is sent to prison, well, what good is that going to do his family? Instead, Torres is making plans to leave his family in Puerto Rico and head for the U.S. He's still making plans. He doesn't know where he's going to go. Maybe Florida, or what he'll do in the States, probably paint houses or work as a roofer. He said he wishes he didn't have to go, but he has no choice. He hopes he can come back if cockfighting is ever made legal again.
Si esto no se arreglara, pues yo me quedo por allá porque aquí en Puerto Rico no hay nada.
But with Puerto Rico's economy the way it is, he said, there's nothing here for him. Before he leaves, though, Torres said he's got to figure out what to do with his roosters. One big unanswered question in Puerto Rico is what is going to happen to all the fighting roosters on the island. By some estimates, there are close to a million of them. Lots of cockfighters expect federal agents to start showing up to confiscate them, the way they do when they enforce cockfighting bans in the U.S. But Torres said, on his property, that is not going to happen. I already told my mother, he said, and I told my wife. that if anyone comes and tries to take one of my roosters, they're going to have to kill me first. And Torres told me that he is not alone in that sentiment. A lot of cockfighters on the island are talking about what they're going to do if federal agents do show up to take their birds.
Puerto Rico se pone colorado. ¿Usted recuerda eso que yo se lo dije hoy?
Mark my words, he said. If that happens, Puerto Rico is going to be soaked in blood.
Créemelo. Créemelo que esa gente va a tener que una guerra.
Torres said that is the most logical thing, isn't it? Because how could cockfighters ask their roosters to fight to the death and not be willing to do the same?
Our thanks to NPR's Adrian Florido for bringing us that story. And now that the federal ban on cockfighting is in full effect, we wanted to check in with Adrian to get an update on this story. And just a note, this conversation was recorded before Puerto Rico was hit by hundreds of earthquakes, so we won't be talking about that. Six of those registered a greater than 5.0 magnitude, including the 6.4 magnitude earthquake that devastated the island on January 7th. But to talk about cockfighting, we welcome Adrian Florido. Hey, Adrian.
Hey, Maria.
So there's been some updates in terms of this story. So what's the latest?
Well, when I reported this piece last year, this cockfighting ban had not taken effect, but it did take effect on December 20th. And a lot of cockfighting arenas actually held these really huge cockfighting events in defiance of the ban.
Some people said, look, I'd be willing to die to make sure that this tradition is not disappeared.
Yeah.
Well, how does this actually play out?
Yeah, the federal government sort of picking a fight with anyone in Puerto Rico, probably the last people you would want to pick a fight with would be cockfighters, right? Because their whole lives are based on this principle and idea of fight to the death. I heard that idea over and over again, which is if these people think that they're going to come and stop us from doing this, well, they've got another thing coming. And it really goes to the sense and feeling that a lot of cockfighters have, which, you know, we heard in the episode, that this is deeply, deeply a part of who they are culturally, traditionally, historically, and they just can't give that up overnight or even with a one-year phase-in period, which is what the federal government gave them on this.
So this whole notion that the United States, again, the colonial fatherhead, is coming in and saying, you cannot do this, the resistance really feels like we're talking about cockfighting, but what we're really talking about is big hand of power over a small, tiny island that many see is a colony of the United States.
Right. I mean, that really is what's at the heart. There are a lot of people, as I mentioned in the episode, who don't like cockfighting on a personal level, who probably would cringe if they ever went into a cockfighting arena and saw these birds fighting, but who aren't willing to take as firm a stance against it as a lot of, say, animal rights activists in the U.S. would like them to, because this notion of we being allowed to decide for ourselves what kind of culture we engage in, that being a more important principle for people than the cruelty of pitting two birds against each other in a ring. And that goes back to the very, very, very deeply internalized sense of being a colonized people that Puerto Ricans have.
Now, there's a moment in your piece where Luis Ángel del Valle says, if the roosters were in the wild, this is what they would be doing as animals, that this is, like, they fight. Is that true?
These particular animals that we're talking about that are bred for this, yes. At this point, people have been breeding these roosters to be cockfighting roosters for generations and generations. So there are changes taking place at a genetic level that makes them instinctual fighters. You know, the counter argument to that is, well, then let's stop breeding birds to be fighters. There's this sort of interesting dilemma because there are hundreds of thousands of them. We can't fight them, but also we can't set them free because they'll just kill each other anyway.
Tell me about women. Is there an element around gender and cockfighting?
When you walk into a cockfighting arena, you see almost exclusively men. There are women who fight roosters too, I mean, in much smaller numbers. But if you ask them, do you feel when you come into these arenas that you are looked down upon or that you're not really welcome there? One woman I spoke to, she said, oh yeah, every single time, and I've been fighting roosters for years. She said that most men would say, no, I don't fight my roosters with women. And she would say, well, I don't understand, what's the problem? I'm not fighting you, it's our birds that are fighting. Eventually, when she would go around trying to find a match for her bird, she would say, oh, this is my husband's bird, I'm trying to find an opponent for it. And then they would agree. And it wasn't until the two birds were released into the ring and she's like stands up cheering her bird on and her name shows up on the little plaque that her opponents would realize that actually it was her bird. And she said that the sweetest feeling was when her bird would win.
So, Adrian, you did not grow up in Puerto Rico.
No, I'm Mexican.
Right. As journalists, we go into the front lines. So you're in the front lines of having to watch a cockfight, which usually, if I'm not mistaken, ends up with one being killed, right?
Often, yeah. I mean, not always. Often does.
What was it like for you? Like, what did you take away personally from it?
I love animals. I'm not really into bloody violence. I went to, you know, maybe half a dozen cockfights. I would avert my eyes when things were getting, like, particularly gruesome. There was this interesting moment when I was sitting with Johnny Rios, who is in my story. I remember leaning over to him at one point and saying, I feel bad for the birds. He said, you're not Mexican. He said, you're a white boy. And, you know, it's kind of got to this idea that, like, people here don't cringe at this because we're so used to it. It's so much of our culture. If you're cringing at it, then that means that you're an outsider.
So, Adrian, you've spent a good part of the last year or so in Puerto Rico reporting on a lot of different issues. So I'm just wondering, in terms of the general status of the island, how people are feeling about things, how does the story of what's happening with cockfighting, how does this story fit in?
What's interesting to me is that Puerto Rico's government has taken this really strong stance against the cockfighting ban, going as far as to sign this local bill, basically saying, you know what, we are not going to obey this because this is a real imposition on us. Taking the kind of stance that it hasn't taken on a lot of these other issues that a lot of Puerto Ricans feel are actually bigger, more important issues. There's kind of this interesting dynamic on the island where people say, wait a minute, why is this the issue that is getting you to pay attention to this unequal relationship that we have with the United States and all the ways that it harmed us over the last many years? It's good that we're standing up to the U.S. government with cockfighting, but also we should be doing it on all these other really huge, important issues that are going to determine the future of Puerto Rico for many decades to come.
Adrian Florido, thank you so much for joining us on Latino USA and for all of your reporting.
No, thanks, Maria.
NPR's Adrian Florido. Coming up on Latino USA, we bring you one of our How I Made It segments. This time, Grammy-nominated artist Jessie Reyes. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from the estate of Joan B. Kroc, whose bequest serves as an enduring investment in the future of public radio and seeks to help NPR produce programming that meets the highest standards of public service in journalism and cultural expression. And the Ring Foundation, in support of NPR's continued mission to create a more informed public, one challenged and invigorated by a deeper understanding of events, ideas, and cultures.
Welcome back to Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and we're going to end our show today, as we often do, with one of our How I Made It segments. These are stories about Latino creators and the work they make. This one is featuring Colombian-Canadian singer Jessy Reyes.
My parents, when I go home, I'm still like, I'm sure they still think I'm 2 feet tall inside, you know?
One day, Jessy was in her parents' kitchen in Toronto, Canada, trying to post on Instagram for her 1.5 million followers.
I was trying to do a story of me singing a cover. And as I start singing, my mom's like trying to talk to me. Okay. Like she's telling me not to leave like certain things in the kitchen, that type of way. And I'm like, bueno, ma. And then I tried recording again. Ay, hombre. Olvidarlas imposible. Ay, hombre. Esto para mí es terrible. Gracias. Interrupted again. I'm like, oh, Lord. It's all in like a sequence. So yeah, I still get it. And for not just from them, for my brother, for my cousins, because I'm the youngest, so I hear it from everybody.
These moments of levity with her tight-knit family keep the 28-year-old singer honest, even in the midst of her meteoric rise. From sold-out shows... to high-profile late-night television performances.
He is a rising singer-songwriter whose debut EP, Kiddo, has amassed over 30 million streams worldwide. Wow. Making her late-night television debut performing figures, please welcome Jessy Reyes!
The artist has gained a following for her rich sound, tinged with pop and R&B, that's paired with a soulful voice and brutally vulnerable lyrics.
Figures, I gave you right to die and you gave me games, love, figures.
One of her first singles, Figures, premiered in 2016 on Apple's Beats One Radio. Love, figures. And most recently, Jessy received her first Grammy nomination in the Best Urban Contemporary Album category for her EP, Being Human in Public. And in true to Jessy form, her parents were the first ones to break the news to her.
Felicitaciones, mami. Por su nominación a los Grammys, mami.
By showing up at her hotel door and waking her up.
You got nominated for a Grammy. I swear, Being Human in Public. Best Urban Contemporary Album, girl! Let's go!
In this How I Made It segment, Jessy talks about the role of music in her childhood, how she writes through her own emotional pain, and how even when her fans sing along to her saddest songs, she feels more connected to them than ever. Here's Jessy Reyes.
Early on, I fell in love with music. My dad plays, he always played at home. And like on a Sunday morning, I remember waking up to hearing him practicing and I'd hear, Bésame, bésame mucho.
Como si fuera esta noche la última vez.
And then I'd go up and start singing with him. He used to sing that one. He used to sing, Quisiera que mi vida regresara al pasado, tener 20 años menos y volverte a conocer.
De eso yo estoy seguro y nunca lo he dudado. Te pediría de nuevo que fueras mi mujer.
It's funny because he dedicates that song to my mom because they have a big age gap. They have like a 10-year age gap, so he sings that to her, which is funny. But he used to sing that too all the time. He still does. He'll grab the guitar every now and then and hop on. My name is Jessy Reyes and I sing sad songs. I knew early on that I loved music and being around it because of my dad really helped to figure that out. But I guess writing-wise, it wasn't until I was in grade 7 that I started learning about poetry. And then my first heartbreak when I when I was like 16, I couldn't be in class because I'd cry. I couldn't, like, I had a hard time with my first heartbreak. I was still writing music, but like I'd been writing music since I was little, since I was 11, and mixing it with poetry. But when I was 16, that's the first time that I made somebody cry with my song. It was an experience for me. I was like, what? Like, I don't know. It was just new. It was new and it was strange and it was interesting and it was crazy. Faraway is originally a long-distance love song. It's having love for somebody, being in love with somebody, and being kept apart by distance.
Hand on the Bible. I think you're the love of my life. Maybe get to hop on a flight to find me. I feel like I need you tonight beside me. You're still a world away. And you're still waiting for your papers. Been feeling like the government wants us to break up. iPhone XXX, FaceTime saves us. I feel what you feel when you're far away. When you're far away. When you're far away.
Once the song was done, the one line that kept sticking out to me was, the government wants us to break up. I remember crying because I'd watched this interview and I saw this little girl bawling and all I could see was me, and thinking about how I care about my family and all of that. So I wanted to make a moment. I wanted to make this potent moment that was viscerally connected to that line. And then I liked the fact that the song on its own stands alone. The song on its own stands alone as this like sad long-distance love story. And the video is just a depiction of the immigration crisis that's going on, about separating Latino families, about the negative Latino stereotypes that we have to fight against, about the prejudice, about all of that. So I like the idea that those are so different and on opposite sides of the spectrum, but they're symbiotic because they have to exist together. That's a topic of conversation often, that like musicians or artists have a responsibility to be politically vocal and all these things, but it's not that preconceived for me, because it would feel inauthentic. For me, it's just about being honest. And this honestly hurts right now. Sometimes when you're singing a song, it's like a wound you're trying to heal, but then you keep opening the wound every time you sing. So it's difficult, but it's interesting. It's a moment. It's a spiritual moment between me and friends that I've never met.
Figures, I'm the bad guy, cause I can't learn to trust love. Figures, you say sorry once and you think it's enough.
Figures was inspired by a low point in my life. It was heartbreak. I was sad. I was across the world. I was in Sweden at the time. I like cried in the studio. I broke down. It was a mess. I was drinking. I was skinny as hell. It was sad. There was a lot of songs I wrote that week. I don't know if it makes me feel better, but I don't. When, like, once I write a song, at least you're busy. It's not even just like better, but busy, because then at least you're doing something that keeps your mind off the pain. The reason I don't write a lot of happy songs is because happiness is like eating a cake. Happiness is like eating something you love, something that you like, soul food. Like, you put it in and it's like, you just feel good. And you like that in your body and you like the feeling. But heartbreak is like poison. Heartbreak is like eating like just the grossest like 50-year-old like egg that got left out or something. And you have it in you and it's not even, you don't even have to think about throwing up. Your body just does it. I feel like that's why sad songs come out of me, because it just hurts so bad. And I don't know, maybe I want it out. Maybe I don't know, but it comes out. Like, it just comes out. I of songs that I hear now that I'm like, I wish I could hug myself because I hear how hurt I am. And I know it was for dumb reasons, but you're human, so your heart gets the best of you and you go on this wave and you're standing on the edge and you don't know what to do. And then, God willing, you grow. But when you hear that moment and you're looking at yourself and you're learning to love yourself more, you just want to hug yourself and be like, it'll be okay. You're going to be okay. But there's two sides. I'm happy I was able to make a little bit of money, make some shows off of Heartbreak. I'm happy I was able to flip that. I had to flip that L into a W and now keep it moving because this is what I want to do in my life. But it's also hard because every time I sing, it's that. It's like if you have a wound and you're trying to heal it, but every time you sing, you're sticking your fingers in an open wound and it's bleeding. But then, at the same time, to play devil's advocate, when I'm at a show and I'm doing that and I'm singing and I'm like 10 meters into my heart. And I feel like crying. That's me going way in the past. And then I come back to the present because I hear people singing. And then I open my eyes and I see people singing back to me. What is life, what is love? What is sun, what is trust? What is everything? Everything is nothing without you. What is life, what is love? I hope I have enough. What is everything? Everything is nothing without you. And I'm not alone in that pain anymore. And now it's us, and it's my dreams, and it's all of that. It's such a juxtaposition. It's such an incredible contrast, because it's like pain and dreams just behind my eyelids.
The words of Colombian-Canadian singer Jessie Reyes. Her debut album, titled Before Love Came to Kill Us, is set to be released on March 27th. That's it for today. Latino USA is produced by Miguel Macias, Fernanda Camarena, Antonia Cerejido, Janice Yamoka, Maggie Freeling, and Alisa Escarce, with help this week from Ginny Montalvo and Joanne DeLuna. We're edited by Sofia Paliza Carr. Our engineers are Stephanie LeBeau and Julia Caruso. Additional engineering this week by Leah Shaw. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Our digital editor is Amanda Alcantara. Our interns are Julia Inés Esparza and Julia Rocha. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, stop by latinousa.org and check out our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again on our next episode. And in the meantime, you can find us on social media. Hasta la próxima. Chao.
Latino USA is made possible in part by the Wincote Foundation, the Ford Foundation, working with visionaries on the front lines of social change worldwide, and the Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org.
My parents come on tour with me, but they love it. They like coming on tour. They have fun. You can definitely catch them at shows with both flags, Colombian and Canadian flags. That's funny.
Support for NPR comes from NPR stations and from the Andrew W. Mellon Foundation, guided by the belief that the arts and humanities are essential to the well-being of diverse and democratic societies. Learn more at mellon.org. And the Cy Sims Foundation. Since 1985, supporting advances in science, education, and the arts towards a fairer, more just society. More information is available at cysimsfoundation.org. This is NPR.